you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 120 of The Law Entrepreneur. As usual, I'm your host, Neil Tyra, and today I have a special guest, Robert Montgomery. Robert is affectionately known as your dental lawyer, and we're going to hear how he has built his practice up to address the niche, if you will, of the legal needs of those in the practice of dentistry. So that spans all kinds of legal issues, employment agreements and lease agreements and mergers and buyouts and a wide spectrum of legal services. And Robert's firm provides that primarily out of his office near Philadelphia. But as you'll hear, they've got offices and resources all around the country, which creates for a really interesting discussion about a solo or small firm practice with literally a national footprint. So very interesting discussion. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did in discussing it with Robert Montgomery. Robert Montgomery, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
I'm delighted that you could be with us today, Robert. Is it Robert or Rob or Bob?
It's Robert, but I go by Rob usually.
No, I like to use the full name. My mother hated people who shorten their names, so I kind of bought into that as a kid. So Robert it is. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
So I am an attorney, and I practice. My main office is in Philadelphia. We have some satellite offices in some other parts of the country, and been practicing for 23 years, and I'm coming up on what will be my 21st anniversary of having my own practice.
Wow, 21 years as an owner of the business, that's an opportunity to have a lot of success and to experience a lot of challenges.
Yeah, for sure. And I've seen both, you know, and it's fun though, you know, as you know, it's some days are better than others, but I've never looked back and regret it, my decision to do my own thing.
So before we get into all that, I'm going to jump to the chase a little bit here and talk about the fact that on our podcast, I was shocked to discover that we had listeners who are not associated with the legal profession. And the first instance that I had of that was when a doctor contacted me. And when I expressed surprise about his habit of listening to the podcast, he said, well, if you think they taught us how to run a medical office in med school, I've got a bridge to sell you. And so looking into that, we've got a fair number of doctors, fair number of dentists, a larger number of chiropractors, which I find kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. You are known as the dental lawyer. Uh-huh. So this is going to be an interesting connection here of putting together the dental lawyer with some, you know, professional service practitioners, dentists and doctors themselves that we wouldn't otherwise think get connected.
Let me stop you for a second there, Neil. Yep. I've never listened to a law podcast, which I guess, you know, we'll get into talk about our podcast a little bit that I do for the dental space. But this is, if this counts as being the first one I've listened to, I've never listened to one before. I always go outside of my space to listen to see what other people are doing differently in other industries, because I kind of know what the lawyers are doing a lot of the times, and I'm trying to do things a little differently oftentimes. So it's ironic.
When I started and created the podcast, I knew that I didn't want to have a podcast that focused on the technical aspects of the law and the nuances of the law, because I'm frankly not that smart. And so I wanted to focus on other areas. So I've had to actually go out outside of the legal community to find people that, you know, can talk about marketing and can talk about operations and staffing and all those kinds of things. So it is good to kind of reach out beyond your, you know, core expertise to learn from others. But let's go back 21 years when you got into business for yourself. Did you do so as a solo at that time, or how did that come about?
I did. I was a relatively young lawyer. I worked for 2 years after law school for a firm that I had worked for through law school. So I worked there during the school year, not in the summer. I'd summered at some other places, but I worked part-time while I was a second year and third year in law school. And at the time, I was working for a sole practitioner who then grew his practice a little bit. And it was mostly commercial litigation. And it was a very sophisticated practice that he had. We were doing a lot of RICO cases and other really sophisticated federal court litigation. He joined up with a couple other solos, the different kind of practice areas. They got together, formed their own firm. And, you know, some things were good, some things were bad. But luckily at that point, I had a little taste of litigation. I did some securities work. I did some M&A work, some banking work, some real estate. And so after a couple of years of that, I kind of been exposed to a lot of different things and just really wasn't happy with my situation and kind of how I was being treated by some of the people in that firm. Some were great, some were not. And it was a time in my life where I didn't have a mortgage. I wasn't married and a family. And so I basically hung out a shingle. I worked out of my apartment in Rittenhouse Square in Center City, Philadelphia, and started with $700, I remember, in my bank account, which was enough to cover the rent for the next month. And I was a full-on solo, taking LRIS referrals, Lawyer Referral Service referrals from the Bar Association, and trying to get work. And so I truly started from scratch as a solo.
So you were working out of your apartment, and when you went to law school and when you were working for 2 years with the other firm, was it always in the back of your mind to go into solo practice, or did you envision yourself as an entrepreneur owning your own business? Is that in your blood?
Yeah, I think so. My mother was an entrepreneur. She had a chemical business, a chemical distribution business. So I kind of grew up. My dad had a restaurant when I was younger. So I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. You know, through law school, you know, I worked because I enjoyed sort of being exposed to the practical things, as we know, you know, sort of like you said, your physician listener said that you don't learn how to run a business in medical school. You really don't learn how to practice law in law school either, as we all know.
Right.
So I was happy. I mean, I was working probably 20, 25 hours a week at different times during the school year. And so in the summer though, I worked for an insurance defense firm too, actually. And they were great firms, good people. But I kind of looked at that situation and realized that that business model was going to be very hard for me to ever bring in business and ever be kind of a business generator or a partner. It was a hard place to be an entrepreneur. So I chose the commercial firm where I ended up working, kind of with an eye that at some point in time, I would want to either be a partner there or have my own shop. And luckily, I'd worked enough through law school and I was exposed to enough different things that when, even though I was a relatively young lawyer to kind of strike it out on my own, I knew how to do things. I knew how to get answers. I knew how to research. I knew where to file things and kind of knew my way around the course because I was exposed to it for a few years before I was even licensed. So
right.
I think I was already kind of thinking, yeah, you know, like my decisions, you know, at the time were angled to where do I need to be to be entrepreneurial, whether it's by myself or with others. But yeah, I guess I always have had that.
Yeah. Angle. And you had for 3 or 4 years there through law school and through your first firm, you really, in essence, are doing an internship. You're learning, you know, how to be a lawyer, and you're also learning how law offices run,
right,
which is an advantage, you know, to some people who don't have that background and are forced, or either by circumstances or, you know, really by choice, to go into solo practice. If they haven't had that kind of exposure, it makes it all the more difficult. So in taking cases initially from lawyer referral services? You stayed in the litigation space?
I was really a general practitioner. Yeah. Sort of in a big city, you know, I was a generalist, you know, because my experience was diverse enough, I was able to take on a lot of work. But fortunately, pretty soon after, one of the clients that my old firm that I'd done a lot of work for had a falling out with the guy that I'd worked for around the time when I left. And they went and took their business to a big firm and got some results from that big firm that were not as good as the results I'd gotten for them in some matters. And at the time, I think they probably had 10 or 12 maybe dental practices that they managed. And so they ended up coming to me as a client, which got me back, kept me in the dental world and in representing dentists.
Okay, so you had already gotten your foot in the door in the dental space before you became a solo practitioner yourself.
Yeah,
and then, I did. And then this client came back and brought a few dentists with them, and now you had a core around which to build.
Somewhat. There was a very different model. So at that time, this was one group that was, you know, essentially is one client that had all these different dental practices. Okay. So, and they, from there, there were some other people that left them that I ended up doing work for. So back in those days, I represented a few very large groups of dental practices, but my practice in that respect in the dental world has changed dramatically since those days.
Yeah. So walk us through the basic things that have changed over the course of time, such that you're now at a point where you can pretty much say, I exclusively represent issues regarding, you know, folks in the dental practice and that world.
Sure. So back in those days, for a long time, I had these large clients that, well, relatively, there were large clients for me that I did things for on a daily basis, HR types of things, leases, they were acquiring practices, employment agreements. And over the course of time, they sold their practices to large private equity groups who have done roll-ups in the dental world. Luckily, as that was before that happened, I really started to network more among the dental world. So in with lenders and insurance agents and CPAs and consultants, and I got to know those people by virtue of my relationship with these other clients. So they introduced me to other people who had introduced me to other people. And I kind of got plugged into a great referral network that as my large clients disappeared, I was able to backfill them with, you know, people that were coming in to buy their first practice or they were doing a startup dental practice. So I went from, you know, big, large clients, you know, a few large clients to lots of little clients who were more transactional in nature, that they would come in the office, they need work, we work on their deal for 2 or 3 months, and then they go off and do their thing, and I may not talk to them until they're ready to bring on an associate or a partner or buy another practice. So my practice in the dental space really shifted from, like I said, a bigger group to these, you know, more one-off deals.
Did that result in more breadth of, in terms of the scope of the matters that you were addressing, because you had a multitude now of smaller practices coming to you, all of whom have different issues, different needs, and different problems?
Not necessarily. I mean, they're the same problems that the big groups had, and the big groups probably had more problems just because they had more people and more places to deal with.
Okay.
So it's always kind of been the same stuff. And, you know, backing up, even back when I had those big dental clients, that was, you know, a very large part of my practice, but I did other things as well.
Right. That was going to be my next question. So how did that then come to be that you started to hone in? When did you recognize that, hey, I could build an entire practice around this one client group?
I'd like to say that it was like great purpose and planning, you know, that led to that.
Right.
But that would
all of a sudden you looked up and you were the dental lawyer, right?
Yeah. I'm like, wow, how'd this happen? How'd I get here? Right. It's like the Talking Heads song. Right. And so, happened
good
over time.
For working in the Talking Heads there as a reference.
That's right. Perfect reference. So, yeah, I mean, there were times where I was involved in a lot of consumer rights litigation kind of in the early 2000s with predatory lending and housing cases, and litigated a lot with structured settlement companies that were factoring, annuity payments, and just a whole lot of consumer rights stuff. So it was really back then my practice was almost 50-50 in terms of dental and the consumer stuff. And I just couldn't make the consumer work for me. I mean, they were fee shifting plaintiffs cases where if you succeeded, you got your attorney's fees. And if you didn't succeed, you never got paid. So it was sort of like sitting down at a blackjack table. And if you won, you got your money back, you know? Right. And it's like, well, wait a second. Why, where's the pop for all this risk? Yeah,
the value added payoff.
Yeah. So, and it was tough. I mean, they're very personal things. You're always dealing with people that are, you know, facing foreclosure or just in really tough places. And they're not, sophisticated or experienced legal consumers. And I just, I couldn't make that work. And at the time that I was phasing that out, I guess at one point there were three lawyers that were working, a total of three. It was me and two other people at that point. And I just couldn't see how that was really a sustainable business model. And so I went back really to being a sole practitioner and still, you know, a generalist. Dental at that point was, like I said, probably 50% of what I did. And slowly over time, it just grew, you know. And once you're kind of plugged into to a niche market and you get to know the players and they get to know you and you have trusted relationships, you can deliver, you know, value to your clients by introducing those clients to this network of trusted people that can do the best job for them, you've become more and more valuable. And so over time, that just led to more business. And it's like anything else, people refer you, other people are happy, they refer their friends. And next thing you know, it's like, wow, this is what I do. We do represent some veterinarians as well. And, you know, I'd say that's probably like 5% of what we do, but 95% is the dental stuff. And only because the dental and the vet are very, there are a lot of similarities in those industries for us.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM and case management tool I've been using for years to manage my practice. If you're feeling swamped trying to keep track of cases and clients, but you don't want to pay the hefty price tag of something like Salesforce or other legal-specific tools, I recommend you give Daylight a look. Daylight helps me prioritize my day. It helps me keep track of my clients, cases, documents, emails, calendars, to-dos, and reminders, all in one place. The case management part of Daylight makes it really easy to organize all the details and work for each case so things are done on time. The best part of Daylight is that it lets you work offline. You don't need an internet connection to pull up case details or info about a client like with other CRMs and case management tools. And new in Daylight is their Zapier integration, so you can automate things like pulling new leads from a contact form on your website right into Daylight. And for techies like me, you know that integration with tools like Zapier is really fundamental to making something like Daylight work the way you want it to work. So to learn how Daylight can help you grow your practice, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first month subscription. That's Daylight by Market Circle. The legal environment is more competitive than ever, and small law firms are feeling the pinch. With over 1.3 million attorneys in the United States and counting, it can be hard to stand out from the crowd. And that's why Spotlight Branding helps lawyers become unforgettable. Spotlight Branding is a different kind of internet marketing company. They don't put their clients on the SEO hamster wheel, and they don't ask them to burn thousands of dollars on speculative pay-per-click advertising. Instead, they're focused on the fundamentals of legal marketing that have worked for dozens upon dozens of years. They use the internet to build a premium brand for solo and small firm lawyers like myself, and they put systems in place to create top-of-mind awareness, allowing their clients to maximize the referrals and repeat business. It's the smart way to grow your law firm. To get more information, visit spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur, and receive a special gift from our friends there at Spotlight Branding. Spotlight Branding, helping lawyers become unforgettable. You know, we had a guest on, a friend of mine, Sean Morris, who has a kind of a similar tale. he started off as general litigation, commercial litigation, and started representing a lot of restaurants. And over the course of time, he realized, hey, I got more than half of my practice is restaurants. Maybe I need to kind of focus on that, double down on that, and become the restaurant lawyer. So was there a time when you got to that point where you said, all right, you know, I've had the dental work and the other stuff on the side, so to speak. Now I think it's time. I'm starting to reach critical mass. And I need to focus down and become really the dental lawyer.
Yeah, I guess probably a few years ago when we redid our website and kind of rebranded our URL now is yourdentallawyer.com.
Yeah.
So the exercise we went through with that kind of forced me to focus a little bit more on business planning and what we wanted to do, and really kind of, I guess, commit even more to that space. I mean, we were pretty much there anyway, but it became really where the exclusive drive. And, you know, and it's funny because, as you say, like, you know, how did it come about? I also look at the same time, and there wasn't a whole lot of other work that's come in after that. So I don't know if that's because I haven't gone out and trying to get it, or thank God I'm doing what I do, because, you know, right. There's plenty of dental work and there's not a whole lot of, the phone's not ringing with a whole lot of other work, you know? So we still do have some clients that I've represented for 15 years that were small businesses or real estate developers too, that, you know, we still do things for, because there's similarity and we can do the legal work for them and we know the relationships. But yeah, if I don't know, if I was relying on just that stuff, I don't know what I would be doing right now. It wouldn't be a good situation.
Well, then, you know, let's kind of bring us now up to date. So you're rebranded, you focused in on becoming, you know, your dental lawyer, and you're focusing on the needs of dental practices and the people who own them. What's the biggest challenge you have in that space?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, for us, it's just managing, you know, the growth of the practice. I mean, we have the ability, we have a lot of work and the ability to get more work. And it's just really stepping back and running our law practice more like a business. And also trying to, for me now personally, just juggle what are the opportunities to market with doing actual work and where we want to spend our time, because there are really, I mean, I could spend all day, every day doing podcasts and networking and seminars and things like that. And I still practice though, you know, I still am doing legal work and still making the donuts every day. Mm-hmm. And it's a challenge to kind of juggle those two things, you know, that I think, with us, we do have some larger clients, again, that are ongoing business, but a lot of what our clients are people that come to us because they're, you know, they're buying their practice and they need us, and they're gone in, you know, 2 or 3 months, like I said, and we don't hear from them for a few years. So to a large extent, you know, we run our practice more like almost like a mass tort firm, in that we always have to get new people coming in because people come and go. You know, it's very much a revolving door, not because we're not providing good service and we don't have happy clients. It's just they don't need us on a regular basis. So we're constantly having to backfill that and keep the deal flow going. And so you have to do that. You have to be out there and market and network and do all those things.
Well, you alluded to this earlier, and I want to kind of focus in on this a little bit. One of the things that fascinates me about your practice is, if I can be the dental lawyer in Philadelphia or outside Philadelphia, certainly the same need exists outside Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. or outside, pick your city. Uh-huh. And so the ability to scale your practice on a national scale is staggering. Uh-huh. And you have tapped into that, have you not? If I look at your website, you know, you're in Philadelphia, but you're in a lot of other places.
Yeah, I'm looking at the certificates I have on the wall. You know, it's Washington, Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, Minnesota, Texas.
Yeah,
and we have other people in our firm. Margaret Bowles, who's one of Our lawyers is also licensed in Florida, Colorado, Massachusetts, Connecticut. Like we've got, we are licensed in a lot of places.
And you have offices in a lot of places.
We do. They're not staffed,
right?
But we are able to meet clients in Austin, New York, Princeton, New Jersey.
Yeah. So to me, that is a fascinating opportunity, and also just creates a staggering level of complexity that you have to manage. So tell us a little bit then now in terms of, so we know you got, you know, four different offices, you're licensed in, you know, damn near the entire country. What's your staffing like? You got hundreds of people working for you or?
No, I wish. We have six lawyers right now. We have a summer associate who's with us the summer, and we have another associate who's taking the bar this summer, the Pennsylvania bar, and she'll be done in a few weeks, and we'll start full-time the end of August, and she worked for us last summer and throughout the school year, and that's kind of our model, and it's worked the best with young associates is to have them work during the school year. Justin Weaver, who's my longtime associate, went through that same program, and he did like I did, worked during his second and third year of law school a lot. And you know, by the time he graduated, he was, you know, able to function as a lawyer, and he was working on transactions, and now he's done hundreds of them on his own. And, you know, he's somebody that I rely on implicitly in the office. Anna Hoslinski is another one of our lawyers here. And so, yeah, we have a total of six people, six lawyers, the summer clerk, the clerk who will be full-time. So it'll take us up to seven. And then we have one administrative person who helps us all.
It's interesting. You likened it to a mass torts office. My old boss, my first boss, runs a very successful personal injury office in downtown Washington. And that's really kind of the model that he used, and I always admired it. And he actually started with, you know, unpaid high school interns, mm-hmm. that later became paid undergraduate interns, who later became, you know, paid law school interns and ultimately became associates. So by the time they signed on as an associate, in some cases they'd been at the law firm 5-6 years.
Right. Yeah. And they knew what was going on. They knew how to get things done. They knew how to operate.
Yeah. In many cases they're more qualified than attorneys more senior to them. Would be. I think that's a tremendous model. So that explains your staffing a little bit in your office, what your office looks like. What role does technology play in managing this practice?
Yeah, it's very important. We have got a customized CRM software that we use to follow and to track deals and prospective clients and assign work.
Now you say customized. Was it built from scratch or no, are you talking
it's
about
a custom version of Salesforce?
Okay, Salesforce. Okay.
Salesforce customized, and which is great, and you know it helps us collaborate, and so you know just to share information, and so we know who's working on what deals, who the brokers are, who the real estate agents are, who the CPAs are, and it also allows us to track, you know, referrals and, you know, who we've referred people to, who has referred people to us, you know, so we, you know, are able to kind of keep an eye on that, and it allows us to track, you know, the numbers of matters we're doing, you know, how many transactions and particular states, and you know, so it's pretty cool. The reports that we're able to generate are, for me, I wouldn't be able to function without it.
Invaluable. So I'm assuming that you're doing that off of a local server, or do you have a cloud-based implementation? And
that's local stuff.
And then, yeah. And how about remotely? Your staff work, you know, with four offices and spread around the country and licensed in all these areas. It seems to me you probably have to have a mobile solution as well. Do you not?
No, they remote into into the server. Yeah.
Okay. And you find that sufficient for your needs, obviously.
Nobody has complained. So it seems okay.
Well, we won't poke the bear there. Okay. So again, you spoke to this briefly about the work that you do, getting the name of the firm out there in the community and working with all the other resources that are in the dental space. Is that your primary marketing approach, is to network and make connections and build relationships with those people who are working with dental practices?
It's an important one. It's not the exclusive one.
No, not exclusive, you know,
but yeah, it's a big part for sure. Is that, and just getting out and doing presentations and webinars for young dentists and dental students and residents too, you know, and you really need to be committed to the space, you know, fully, you know, it's
I don't think this is something that you could do, you know, half baked. I mean, I think in order to have the success that you're having, as I said, you got to be committed to it. You got to go to where they are.
Right. And you have to give back too.
It has
you
to be valued.
This person. Yeah. That just shows up when there's, you know, when there's work to be had, and then, you know, you're not going to deliver any kind of, as you said, value or education to, you know, to the client base that you have, you know? So do we, you know, get out and talk to dental residents about what their employment agreements should say and buy them lunch? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Are we doing that because we want those people to be clients someday? It'd be nice, but you know, that's not really the reason why we're doing it. You know, we have to be, you know, if you're going to be committed to something and to a niche client base, you need to contribute. You know, it's just like any other community. You know, the guy that's just like taking all the gravy and not contributing, you know, that's kind of a short-term plan, and it doesn't show a commitment to the industry.
I remember one of our guests in kind of similar role said, you got to prove to the client base that you're with them, not that you're exploiting them.
Right. Yes, that's very true.
It made a lot of sense to me. So you've had all this success over the past 21 years, and you've built this really dynamic practice. You know, I suspect that you were, you know, everything just worked perfectly along the way.
Yeah.
You know, it was just a golden laid path to success. Might you have ever had any kind of issues? And if so, do any of them stand out as a problem in your mind?
Yeah, I just think some of the consumer rights stuff was just not really, from a business standpoint, profitable. It just didn't make sense at all. A lot of that stuff is really probably handled better by lawyers that are, you know, legal aid and those types of folks, because from a private practice, I just couldn't figure out how to make that work. So I really, you know, kind of got involved with that for probably too much and for too long. And, you know, look, at the benefit of hindsight, I should have, you know, would have been better if I had focused in the dental space to the extent that I do now back then.
Yeah.
And really tried to do that. But, you know, things happen kind of in their own course of time. And, you know, technology has changed, and how we're able to reach people and serve our clients have presented, you know, opportunities for us to do what we do the way we do. And frankly, Neil, like, you know, 20 years ago, you couldn't do what we did.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. In some ways, you couldn't be who you are today 20 years ago, because the support structure and the technology didn't permit it.
Right. No, not at all. And you couldn't reach people the same way. And you know, look, we weren't doing a podcast 20 years ago. We were doing a podcast 10 years ago.
No, that was going to be my next point. You know, social media, it plays an important part in your practice, and I know, and particularly you have a podcast yourself. Now, you say you haven't really listened to legal podcasts, so clearly yours is not a legal podcast. Tell us a little bit about your podcast.
Yeah, so I do a podcast called The Dental Amigos, and I do it with my friend and client, colleague, who wears many hats, Dr. Paul Goodman, who is a dentist who lives in Philadelphia, and he's a practicing dentist in central New Jersey, who's also involved in a lot of continuing education and lecturing to young dentists and to older dentists on implants, and he does some practice brokerage, and really a dynamic guy who's a good friend. And so our thing is that, you know, we talk about the dental world, business, the dental business world from his perspective as a dentist. He talks about his experiences and as a broker and some of the other consulting that he's involved in. And I talk about my experiences and from a legal standpoint. So together between the clinical and the dentist view and the lawyer dental view, we try to help people and kind of identify and chat about business and legal issues that most dentists have to face. And it's a blast. We have fun doing it. It's never drudgery. And
how long have you been doing the Dental Amigos?
Probably about 6 months now.
Right.
We took a little break. We put out a few episodes. Now, I guess we've probably put about 10 or 11 episodes out. We're getting ready to roll out a bunch more. You know, it's just delivering, you know, meaningful content to people. And it's truly, like I said, it's fun to do.
Yeah. So aside from the Dental Amigos podcast and your website, do you use social media in any to any extent?
Yeah, we do. You know, we're involved in some Facebook groups. Dr. Goodman has a Facebook group called Dental Nachos, which has 9,500. Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
Dental Amigos and Dental Nachos. There's not anybody from south of the border in the production, right?
No, not yet. But there are in the group, in the practice,
sure.
In the Dental Nachos group, there are, you know, and so the nachos started first, and that really came from Paul's, you know, Paul had a, has worked in as a server in the restaurant business, yeah. You know, before and during dental school. And he looks at nachos as being kind of the thing that it's got a little something of everything. So, you know, it's really the kitchen sink, right?
Interesting. And you couldn't call it the dental kitchen sink.
No, that wouldn't be that interesting. Yeah. So, you know, so he had the nachos, and that group has grown. I mean, I think that's a little over a year old, and he's, you know, close to 10,000 people in it. And it's got a really good vibe, which kind of mirrors his personality. And so we decided to do a podcast as sort of a companion to that, to some extent, for the people that are a part of the group to have some more content to listen to. So it's like, we're friends, and that's the nachos. So we're amigos, right?
And the amigos, right.
Yeah, here we are.
That's terrific. Well, listen, Robert, this has been terrific. I'm really impressed with your practice and what you bring to the table. And I thank you ever so much for being a part of the show today. We'll have all of this in the show notes for our folks to listen to and to look up. But if somebody wants to reach out and touch base with you and follow up on something you've said, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Probably through our website, yourdentallawyer.com, and there are links to, you can either submit an email or question through the web portal, or my email link is on there too, on my bio.
Terrific. All right. Well, then thanks ever so much, Robert, for being a guest today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Great. Thanks for having me, Neil.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it will do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.